Milo's Money Days are here, and we're making it rain for rewards members. For the first time ever, when you make a purchase of $200 or more through July 12th, you'll get up to $30 back in extra Milo's money. Not a member yet? Join for free today, because members get more at Lowe's. Milo's Money Award varies based on status. Members in gold get 30, silver get 20, and bronze get 10. Milo's Money valid for 30 days. Restrictions and more terms at Lowe's.com/Milo's Money Days.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Adventures in Lucid Dreaming by Puka. As early as I can remember, I've been able to tell when I'm asleep but not having a normal dream. It's difficult to describe, but it feels completely different from dreaming. It's crisp and I'm hyper-aware. Most of the time I wake myself up, because I don't really care for the experience, and the emotional after effects are so draining. When I was around 14 years old, I began having lucid dreams where I was visited by people who acted as guides. Only one guide would appear in each dream, and they were very clear that they were tasked with showing me specific things to gauge my awareness. I know that sounds unhinged, but that's what I was told at the beginning of every visit. The visits happened every 6 to 12 months, and to this day, each one is burned into my memory. One incident I remember extremely clearly was when I was visited by an older woman in a white cotton nightgown. She was very petite, had messy gray hair, and it was obvious she didn't want to be there. She seemed agitated. She said she needed to show me something and held out her hand. I took it, and suddenly, I was in a busy subway station underground. Now, I've never seen a subway in real life. I grew up on a ranch in the middle of nowhere. But I knew that's where I was, and I knew something was very wrong. The woman, my guide, told me to let my body float up to the ceiling so I could get a good look at everyone on the platform. It was extremely crowded. She assured me they couldn't see me. So I did, and it was surprisingly easy. As I looked down at the people waiting, my guide asked me if any of them felt wrong. I knew immediately. There was a man in the crowd, sitting on a metal bench, who gave off a terrible energy. It's been over 20 years, and I can still see his face. Even thinking about him now makes my stomach turn. He was maybe in his late 40s or early 50s. Caucasian, tall but slumped over a bit. Dark brown hair, thick build. He wore gray slacks and a loose gray wool coat. And his eyes, they were glossy and empty. I remember thinking he lacked the breath of life because his eyes had no soul behind them. That wasn't my own thought. I was 14. I didn't say things like breath of life. It was as if I was being fed extra information as I tried to assess him. This man looked empty and hungry at the same time. My guide nodded, like she agreed that he was the one we were looking for. Then she told me, "He can't see us. Know his heart." That's exactly what she said. And oddly enough, I could, but I regret it tremendously. I knew everything all at once, like I understood him through some kind of osmosis of thought or energy. He was there, at that platform, at that busy hour, because he was shopping for a child. It wasn't like I was reading his mind. It was deeper than that. I knew his soul. I understood his intentions. A strong feeling of being unsafe washed over me, and I started to cry. I got angry at my guide and began yelling at her. She grabbed me, and suddenly, we were back in my room, standing next to my body, asleep in bed. She helped me get back into my body, and then knelt beside my bed, apologizing. She said that this had been a bad test, and that she wouldn't be back. That I would never have to do that again. She was right. No guide or visitor has ever asked me to travel with them, or do whatever the hell that was since. Mind you, I was 14, and a very sheltered 14 at that. I woke up as soon as she left my room and began crying. I felt violated, like I had been shown something I wasn't meant to see, or even understand. I didn't sleep for days afterward, until my mother began to worry and stayed up one night to make sure I actually slept. For weeks, I was withdrawn. I spent a lot of time alone, outdoors. I didn't receive another visit for about 2 years. It's hard to articulate exactly what happened, but I knew truths about the world that hadn't been fathomable to me before. And I hated it. I hated myself for knowing. Since then, I've gotten a better handle on my special, quote-unquote, dreams. Like I said, I usually choose to end them as soon as I realize what's happening. But sometimes I don't. I've been visited by loved ones who've passed on, pestered by something non-human during pregnancy, and contacted by beings I've been asked to call the Twilight People. It has something to do with where they live. But those are other stories, and I think this one was plenty long on its own.
Dream Experiences by Hayes. My dad, brother, and I have always discussed our dreams. This is because my dad liked to mess with our dreams when we were kids. He would tell us a riddle or give us a task while tucking us into bed, telling us that we would dream of the solution. Then he would be by our beds as we began to wake up to ensure that we could recall our dreams before we had a chance to forget them. One of these dream riddles started out with my dad running his fingers through my hair, part of our bedtime tucking in routine, and repeating the letters OTTFF, blank, blank, OTTFF, blank, blank, OTTFF, blank, blank. He then asked, "What are the next two letters in this infinite sequence?" Now, I couldn't have been more than 7 at the time, and I had no idea what infinite even meant, and this wasn't any alphabet I had ever heard. But he assured me that I would have the answer for him when I woke up. I can still remember this dream 31 years later, as if I had just woken up from it. In the dream, there was a Vanna White type of woman showcasing this rotating pyramid of Barbie dolls, and this unseen announcer describing the dolls as they spun. "Today's prize is a tower of Barbies," the unseen voice said, and then it described the dolls. I woke up to find my dad sitting on the edge of my bed, eager to hear the answer. He asks about the dream. I tell him, "Barbies." He asks if I could describe the Barbies. Well, there are 13 Barbies. 6 of them were boys and 7 of them were girls, I recount, certain that I have somehow failed this dream test. He tells me, "You know the answer. You just told it to me." Then he repeats the OTTFF blank blank from the night before. It took my 7-year-old brain a while, but I answered, SS. The next 2 letters in that infinite sequence were SS. Each letter representing the first letter of the numbers 1 through 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now, the first time I had a prophetic dream, I was in my early 20s. The dream didn't make any sense. I was standing there in the middle of this tall grass that surrounded me on all 4 sides. The feeling of the dream was calm. Nothing was happening, and I was just waiting. Then a woman's voice said, "Asavita." It got my interest in the dream, but nothing happened. The voice said it again, "Asavita." I called my dad to tell him about the dream, and he told me to pay attention to my day. Later, after going about my usual day of working, I needed to swing by Walgreens to pick up my prescription. I decided to go through the drive-thru, and that's when I heard it. It was a woman in the pickup line next to me. She said, "Asavita." I froze. "Asavita," she said again. My eyes got wide and chills ran over my body. My dream came rushing back to me. I was in the wall of green in my dream when I heard the woman's voice, and here I am at Walgreens hearing the same thing. Immediately, I called my dad and told him. His response was, "Welcome to the family." I asked what the dream meant, and he said probably nothing, and that he has silly little future dreams like that all the time. Fast forward to now. I'm in my late 30s and recently gave birth to beautiful twins. I've been keeping and discussing dreams for most of my life now. I've had a few more random, meaningless prophetic dreams, but nothing of note until recently. I was reading over my dreams. I do this from time to time to see if anything sticks out, or if I notice a trend, like dreaming of certain things during certain moon phases. This is when I came across my cruise ship gender reveal dream. The dream happened in March of 2018. I'm on the main deck of a cruise ship at a club kind of dance thing. People are dancing and having a good time when the DJ comes to the mic and says, "Time for the gender reveal." He lets off smoke. It's blue and pink. "Twins," he yells, as confetti erupts from the sky and everyone turns and cheers for me. I begin to run. I'm naked, and my stomach begins to grow and grow and grow. Then I wake up. On June 24th of 2020, I had a dream about the numbers 3-1-10-2 that had been written on window panes. They are a combination that I cannot solve. But I know if I can solve the combination, it will open a closet that has children in it. July 24th, 2020, 1 month later, I discovered I was pregnant with twins. On March 10th, 2021, I gave birth to a healthy baby boy and girl. 3-10-2-1 was the correct combination. March 10th, 2021. My dreams haven't been as vivid or telling since I had the twins, probably from lack of sleep, but I still write them down first thing in the morning when I do have a dream. Hopefully, I can pass the dreaming along to my children.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Prophetic Dreams by Kevin. You guys have been talking about prophetic dreams a lot lately, so I figured I'd share my experience, because I've had them for most of my life. For starters, I've always had incredibly vivid dreams. I think it's because I had a somewhat eidetic memory as a kid. I was highly aware of my surroundings and details. For example, I'm 35 years old now, and only a few months ago, I described an apartment my family briefly lived in when I was 2. My parents were stunned that I remembered it so accurately. I'm going to tell you about the 3 most impactful prophetic dreams I've had. The first dream. I was around 3 years old. I dreamed my brother, sister, and I were sitting in my dad's car outside my aunt's house, while my dad was inside. My brother was being his usual rambunctious 6-year-old self, and my sister looked nervous. Then my brother pulled the emergency brake, and the car started rolling backward. We rolled across the street, crashed through the neighbor's fence, and slammed into their metal swing set. What's always stuck with me is that, at 3 years old, I didn't even know what an emergency brake was. Even if someone had explained it, that's hard for a child to conceptualize. Fast forward a week. We were at my babysitter's house, which sat on a steep hill, the kind we sledded down during winter. The driveway went up that hill, and my dad parked at the top while he ran inside to give her a check. My brother got out of his seat and pretended to drive. I watched as he grabbed the emergency brake. Suddenly, it all clicked in my mind. "No, don't touch that," I shouted. My sister saw my panic and started freaking out too. But my brother pulled it anyway. My sister jumped out of the car. "Thanks, sis." And my brother and I went barreling down the driveway. We slammed into a massive oak tree on the opposite side of the street. The old truck had sideways bench seats in the back, and I hit my head hard against the rear window. My brother somehow walked away fine, and my sister got lucky jumping out when she did. When I told everyone I had dreamed about it, nobody thought much of it. I already talked a lot about my strange dreams, so it just got brushed off. The second dream. When I was 17, I dreamed I was in my friend's barn, late at night, with a bunch of people around. I had just been jumped and punched, and everything felt disoriented, like I was dazed and reality was off. When I woke up, I said out loud, "Who would punch me?" I wasn't that kind of kid. I stayed out of drama and never had enemies. About a week later, a bunch of us went to a high school bonfire. As people were leaving, someone in another car shot a paintball gun at someone's car, just being a dumb kid. I didn't laugh. I didn't even think much of it. Later, we went back to a friend's house to hang out. A while later, I saw about 8 or 10 guys walking down the street toward us. They looked older, early 20s. 6 of them walked right up the driveway. Everyone else scattered, except me and the friend who lived there. The guys took off their shirts, for whatever reason, and started yelling. I tried to calm things down. "Guys, I don't even know what you're mad about. The person who did that isn't even here." Next thing I knew, 3 of them hit me, each landing a punch. I barely had time to react, but managed to land 1 solid left hook before I fell. I still have a scar on my knuckle from that. My friends finally came running back with fireworks and paintball guns, and the guys left. An hour later, I realized exactly where I was, standing in my friend's barn, the same place from my dream. The third dream. This one wasn't as straightforward. I was about 22. I dreamed I was back in the home I grew up in. I was standing in the dining room and saw someone coming up our long driveway. It was my uncle, riding a four-wheeler. As I walked to the front door, the light in the room dimmed and a heavy sense of dread hit me. The door in front of me turned black and old, covered in numbers carved all over it. One number, a slash, then two numbers, over and over again. I was terrified, but it was like something else was moving my body. I couldn't stop myself from opening the door. When I did, I saw the scariest thing I've ever seen. It was death, not symbolic death, death itself. A tall, black, robed figure, maybe 7 feet high, inches away from me. I woke up instantly, shaking, heart pounding, goosebumps everywhere. It was the most terrified I've ever been, awake or asleep. For weeks I felt uneasy, and given my history with prophetic dreams, I couldn't shake the feeling that it meant something. Then, one morning, I found a friend of mine, someone I considered a brother, unconscious. He had been working on sobriety and relapsed while the rest of the house was asleep. He didn't make it. That day, it hit me. The numbers on the black door weren't random. They formed a date. The day he died. Even worse, he was the only person who had ever driven a four-wheeler up our driveway. It all connected. I realized that dream had been a warning, and I'd missed it. A week or two later, I saw him again in a dream. He came to say goodbye one last time, to tell me it was okay. After that, I started recognizing prophetic dreams the moment I woke up. I learned to spot the clues in real life, and sometimes I'd predict things down to the smallest detail. I even remember leaning over to my wife once and telling her exactly what was about to happen, and being right. It all came to a head in my mid-20s when I had a particularly bad one. I don't remember much of it, just that it terrified me. That day, I avoided everything from the dream, every place, every action, every person. Since then, the prophetic dreams have mostly stopped. I'll be honest, they sound cool, but they're not. I've had at least 10 hyper-realistic dreams of dying in a plane crash, and every time I fly, I think about them. Every single flight.
My Sleep Paralysis Daytime Experience by Fun Zookeeper Game 9716. For context, I had never experienced sleep paralysis before. I have been obsessed with aliens since my first encounter with a mantis being. This is a story that I've shared before. Now, I have been wanting to pay more attention to synchronicities, any sign of communication from NHI, and had been practicing CE5 meditations to ask for or make contact. CE stands for close encounter. Can I just say these CE5s really do work? As long as you're truly open and aligned or centered. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Bashar, channeled by Daryl Anka. He has a formula that includes following your highest excitement. So I applied this logic when choosing my meditations. I put on what I thought was the most exciting meditation, which was a mirror meditation. Anyways, I was expecting the aliens to just pop out of the mirror, as it was an open-eyed meditation. Honestly, I was starting to creep myself out because of expectancy. And then I said, if you do want to show yourself, can you do it slowly, in a light or beautiful way at first? I don't want to get scared. Anyway, I put out my intentions for benevolent contact and made my requests. And I stayed in an open frequency, so when nothing appeared, I was okay with that, as I was willing to put in the work and try again and again the next night and so on. I went to sleep. I was tossing and turning, and I kept waking up. It was about 5 or 6 a.m. at this point when I woke up again. It was very bright outside. The whole room was lit with the morning sun. My wardrobe has a mirror on it and sliding doors, so when I woke up, I saw myself in bed, lying down in the mirror on the sliding door. I then heard a very loud child's voice say, "Are you human?" And then I saw my wardrobe begin to open. I saw these blue eyes. They were floating, and there was a huge smile. It was kind of distorted and hard to tell if there was a face or body. The smile looked far too big, inhumanly big. And when I couldn't make out a body and saw it come towards me, I got very frightened. I then saw it go back into the wardrobe and close the door again. I calmed down and realized I was paralyzed and couldn't move. This had never happened to me before, like I said. I heard again a very loud child's voice say, "Are you human?" I then looked again and saw that my wardrobe was beginning to open. This time, it was an actual alien, like a gray alien. The ones with large heads, small bodies, dark eyes, no whites. I was wide-eyed in awe and wanted to interact or move closer. It looked worried about me, like it was afraid to scare me. I wanted to move closer, but when I remembered that I couldn't move, I struggled and kept saying in my mind, "I can't move." After I struggled to move, the experience ended, and I was immediately asleep again. So what do you guys think? Anyone have any similar experiences? Do you think it appeared as a light, blue-eyed, smiling entity because it was trying to follow my request for a slow entrance or something beautiful or light? I think so. I thought it had the aura of a child, very sweet, kind, and naive. But I was really glad that it made contact with me. I hope that one day we can all interact more on demand.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
"I Hate Dreaming" by Jackie. You guys really like to talk about dreams. Well, I have PTSD and I mostly hate dreaming. On nights of intense dreaming, it's like I didn't even sleep. With that being said, a lot of times I don't even dream about myself or people I know. I wish I had the time to sit down and dream journal in the morning, but I just don't. Once, I dreamed I was home alone, and someone in my small town found out and broke into my house. I hid inside my closet with a knife. The dream felt so real, right up until the person opened the door. Then I woke up when I realized I was dreaming. I spent the whole day thinking about whether I'd actually be able to defend myself in that situation. I'm here to tell you about one dream in particular that I actually managed to write out right after I woke up. It was Christmas Eve, and I was in a shop where my husband was working. We were the only place open, and everyone was just so angry and violent. We're trying to get all of our stuff in the car and leave at the end of the night. We look up, and imagine the black oil monster from Ferngully. It starts forming in the sky. We throw what we can in the car and go home. We're pacing around the house, looking at the sky through the windows. I watch the sun come up, almost shoot up into the sky. It becomes a huge circle of fire and lava, then splits into two. The two pieces of the sun become a fiery cross and an upside-down cross. Then, they turn into these two enormous beings, if you will. I could only see the big demon being, not the biblically accurate angel. I run to look out at the street. People in the house are talking about the government collapsing. The power goes out. I look up into the trees. There's this huge, evil, clown-looking balloon right above them. I scream and run back to the window. But before I can get there, I see the kids standing there looking outside. Suddenly, something is thrown through the glass. I grabbed the kids and told them to stay away. Some little demon is circling the house, taunting us, breaking every window he can see us through. My kids won't listen. That's when I start to realize, there's no way out of this. This is the end. I fully wake up, still half asleep, and I'm just thinking, please don't go back to sleep. Make my alarm go off. I'm drifting in and out, almost reliving the dream. Then finally, my alarm goes off. I just lay there thinking, what was that? After writing it down, I just started my day and got ready for work. So yeah, I do not like dreaming. Even the fun ones aren't fun. I don't feel rested in the morning. I'm left thinking about them all day, replaying parts in my head, trying to remember details. If anyone has tips on how to not dream, that would be great.
Dark Figure at the Edge of My Bed by Clarissa. I was a junior in high school at the time, so I was around 16, going on 17. I started talking to a boy that I liked. We'll call him Chris. He would draw on his arm with Sharpie, I guess to mimic having tattoos at the time. Stupidly, one day, I decided to tell him to draw on my arm with a Sharpie, which he obliged. He started drawing a circle, and in the middle of it, he drew a star. I knew instantly what the mark was, and I just told him how cool it looked and thanked him after continuing to chat with him. It was the end of the school day, so my grandma had pulled up and waved me down. I told him goodbye, gave him a hug, and left. I continued my day as normal. My grandma noticed the mark and questioned why I had drawn that on myself, and I just said, "Oh, some boy did that, but it's dumb, so I'm just going to wash it off later, while I'm in the shower." She gave me this look and said, "Okay." Time passed, and it was time for my shower, and for some reason I forgot it was there, then got out and continued to get ready for bed as normal. I fell asleep before I knew it. But suddenly I woke up in the middle of the night, and I couldn't move at all. I knew instantly that I was experiencing sleep paralysis. I couldn't move or talk. I was just able to look around my room until I saw a dark figure come through my door, make a slight right turn, and stop while facing my direction at the foot of my bed. Inside, I was screaming, trying to call for my grandma or my grandpa, but no words came out. In my head, I started praying to God and kept screaming, "Leave me alone." Again, all in my head. Then, all of a sudden, it flew over me. And as quickly as it appeared, it was gone. I finally could move and talk, but I didn't want to disturb my grandparents from their sleep and tell them about what just happened. So I laid there in bed for 30 minutes, which seemed like an eternity, and I finally worked up the courage to flick the light switch on. I tried staying up as long as I could, but I guess I ended up dozing off, and I woke up to my alarm. I bolted out of bed and I ran to the bathroom and scrubbed off the marking. I did this until my skin was bright red and I couldn't see any trace of the Sharpie. I didn't tell my grandparents what happened. I just held it in until I saw my friends at school that same morning, and they were just as freaked out as I was. I haven't gotten sleep paralysis since I was in high school, and let's just hope that it stays that way. Now I live out of state with my boyfriend, 8 years graduated from high school. But I'll tell you one thing, I don't think I'll ever have someone write that on my arm again. And to Chris, who decided to draw that specific marking on my arm, I hope that you didn't do that with anyone else.
The Titanic Haunt by Corey. For as long as I can remember, I've dreamt about the Titanic. I've always felt this deep connection to her and her story. I remember being far too young to have had the knowledge, but watching old movies about the Titanic and being able to point out when interiors or parts of the ship didn't look the way they actually would have. To this day, I still dream about her. These are a recollection of some of those dreams. Number 1. I open my eyes, and I'm down there with her, the Titanic. I'm sitting on the seabed, far off to her port side. I can see her faintly illuminated in a green light. I hear the sounds of the current and the groaning of her steel plates as the water moves. But I'm not wet, nor am I cold. I feel a strange calm, as though I'm meant to be there. I walk up to her side in the dim light and lay my hand against her hull, like saying hello to an old friend. I close my eyes, and now I'm walking along her deck. My hand glides over the railing, a familiar but long-forgotten feeling. I walk all the way to the forward point of the bow and turn around to take in the sight of her. I smile and feel an overwhelming sense of calm and belonging. Then the dream is over. Number 2. I open my eyes, and I'm standing in a brightly lit hallway. I recognize this hallway, with its ornate furnishings and antique lighting. I'm standing on Titanic's A deck, along a corridor between the first-class staterooms. Her lights are burning brightly, and I can feel the vibrations in the deck from her engines working at full speed. All of the suite doors stand open, showing the elegant furnishings and lavish decor inside. Yet every room is devoid of life. Every room, every hallway, every long, empty corridor. Not a single soul, save me. I walk through her empty hallways, looking inside each room, but never finding anyone. This doesn't scare me, nor does the fact that she's steaming ahead at full speed. I know where she's headed, where she's taking me, and I know that we'll go together. That feeling gives me a great sense of comfort, because it means that neither of us are alone. She's there for me, as I am for her, as we always will be. Number 3. I open my eyes and find myself sitting in a small dockhouse on the edge of New York Harbor. It's a very dark and rainy night, but I can still distantly see the glow of Lady Liberty's torch, a light in the darkness. Very slowly and without any sound, an object covers her light in complete blackness. Whatever is out there is massive. I can barely see a portion of its mass through the small window in front of me, so I hesitantly reach for the door to investigate. As the door opens, I look up, and almost unimaginably high above my head, in the blackness, I can make out the faded white paint through the wall of rust. Titanic. She sits there in the darkness. As I look upon her, time begins to rewind her years. Rust peels away, revealing glossy black paint underneath. Her anti-fouling paint becomes the deep red of its original color. The deckhouse, long since washed away, begins to reform and become as new again. Funnels appear in their places, bright yellow and dark black as can be. The mast stands back up in its place, the crow's nest returning as if it were never lost to the sea. Steam begins pouring out of her funnels, and the deafening sound of her horn jolts me out of sleep. Number 4. I'm standing in the tree line, on what appears to be the edge of a large, serene lake. The sun is shining above, and the sky is as blue as can be. I walk closer to the water, and off in the distance, in the very center of the lake, I see her. Titanic. She's sitting there with anchors weighed, seemingly waiting for something. The next thing I know, I'm standing on her decks. I realize with sudden urgency that I can't allow them to take her off this lake, because here, she's safe. I run to the captain and frantically try to dissuade him from taking her out through the large gate and into the sea. I beg the officers, the crew, anyone who I think will listen, but to no avail. As she begins to steam ahead and make her final turn for the open sea, I find myself resigned to go with her. Her fate will be mine, and mine with hers. Try as I might, I couldn't change that. And out to the sea, into the sunset, we sail, together.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we have a comment here on Patreon from Shane. They said, like you said, Andy, animals can smell hormonal changes in the body. That's how they know when someone is pregnant. It's similar to how service dogs can sense low blood sugar or other types of ailments in order to perform their tasks. I hadn't even thought of that.
It's kind of like that one lady who can smell people that have cancer. Hear about her?
No, I know we talked about the dog thing, but I didn't know there was a woman. I'm going to pull it up.
I mean, it could just be like some parlor trick, but that's a pretty sick trick to play if she's violating HIPAA and finding this out some other way. I don't know. Apparently, it's a thing.
What's the diagnosis code for smelling cancer on somebody? It says, Joy Milne has a heightened sense of smell, so much so that it allows them to detect the scent of diseases, including cancers. And researchers are investigating this phenomenon to develop new diagnostic tools. Milne has helped scientists identify specific chemical markers associated with certain diseases, which could lead to diagnostic tests in the future. So it's just kind of like an X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very important tool.
That almost sounds like a curse, though. Imagine having like really sensitive hearing, not to the point where you can hear things that are quieter than most people, but where everything sounds a lot louder, too. And you just have to walk around with earplugs everywhere you go.
Yeah, I feel so bad for dogs in loud environments.
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's see, we got a couple more here. We'll go through these pretty quickly. Here's a longer one from Thunder Dancer in our Discord. They said, just finished the episode with a story about the big black dog, I wanted to chime in as we have myths and legends about these here in Denmark as well. In the old days, dogs like that were seen near graveyards, which was most likely why some of them would call them hellhounds and were viewed as a bad omen. In Denmark, black dogs aren't the only harbingers of death. Is it harbinger or harbinger?
Harbinger.
Harbinger. Okay, good, good, good.
Yeah.
In some places in the north of Denmark, north of Jutland, I'm assuming that's how you say it. It's probably some weird dialect that I've never even heard. It has been documented, I think it was back in the 1800s or so, that a white poodle was seen three times, and each time just before a disaster hit or someone died. I don't recall the details, but these disasters entailed the same house burning down three times, people hanging themselves, and children tragically dying, all because of a cute little poodle.
Goodness gracious. Well, magna tak, Mr. Denmark, for sending that in. And it's Jutland. The J's in Scandinavian languages are with a Y.
See, I suspected it. There was something there.
There's always something, yeah.
Yeah, I know. They also said that they've also been discussed in a less evil light here in my country, though. A few years ago, during an episode of a Danish ghost hunting TV show called, I'm not going to pronounce it, it basically translates to, Is Anybody There? In English. Two of the TV hosts were interviewing an actual witch. Rest in peace, apparently, to this witch. They passed away. To talk about the local legends from the area that we're planning to investigate during the night. And at one point during the interview, she referred to this mythical big black dog as a spirit animal. There you go. Signifying guidance and protection. It's quite fascinating how varied and how widespread folklore of the same creatures really is. Well, thank you for all of that information. And you're right. It is interesting how different cultures have different views on certain cryptids or certain phenomena or anything, really. This kind of leads into one of the stories I want to talk about this week, the story by Clarissa, the dark figure at the edge of the bed. And this kind of just goes to show that different cultures, different beliefs can create an intention around something. And that creates the effect, the cause and effect of this thing. And this is going to make sense, trust me. The pentagram. Obviously, that's what Chris drew on her arm when she had that nightmare and saw the thing at the foot of her bed. It, to her, this was something that was evil. She knew it as evil because of pop culture, because of books and movies and TV shows and stuff. We know, we've talked about this, the pentagram is just a sigil for protection. So the fact that this pentagram on her arm brought this evil sleep paralysis demon into her house is kind of silly on the surface, but when you think about it, it's because of the intention. It's always your belief and your intention that shapes your reality.
100%. Yeah. And who knows what Chris's intentions were, what he may have said.
That's true.
If he did say anything, I don't remember. But at 16 or 17, I know not all teenagers are naive. But from what I remember in high school, anybody who was drawing a pentagram, whatever the direction may be, it was for that sort of spooky factor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we grew up thinking that was something spooky and something evil, just because that's what we were told by modern pop culture. But the history of it is the exact opposite, and it's kind of that way with a lot of things.
It really is. It really is. So speaking of things that make you laugh a little bit, I do have to clear the air just a little bit and respectfully about the Titanic story by Corey.
Mm-hmm.
I do take it very seriously because there are a lot of cases that are similar to this. There's somebody known as the Titanic Boy. I think that story came out in the 2000s around then.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar. He was like 5 or 6 and explained sinking in a ship and drew the Titanic with great detail. And then probably most notably something similar to this is the James Leininger case. The kid who was like in World War II, I guess. He was 2 years old and had all these night terrors about being in an airplane crashing.
Mm.
And he was able to name several people that were involved. I think some sort of shipmate or lots of other people and a real pilot who was there. And this kid was like 2 or something. Pretty wild. So I don't say all that just to take away from his experience. But I will say reading it, it kind of felt like a romantic type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it sounded very romantic and sensual.
Yeah.
And when you talked about, like, gliding against her hull, not to be confused with hole, yeah. I had to pause a little bit, and I just know that people listening were probably chuckling to themselves if they're half as immature as me, but I just had to clear that. And yes, I'm aware that it sounded like a love letter, but it's still pretty remarkable. I really appreciate this story because there's so many like it.
Yes, it was Corey's own Song of Solomon, if you will.
Yeah. He did have some other thoughts to add on. I asked him how many dreams he had before actually researching more about the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And he replied saying, "I honestly can't say that I remember how many I had before I really got interested. I want to say I was around 6 or 7 maybe when these started. And I started expressing interest in asking for every Titanic related book or movie that my parents would get me." And then I asked him what his own theory is about it all because, you know, owner knows best. Mm-hmm. And he said, "I've only met one other person that shared this sort of deep connection in the recurring dreams. And we both believe that we were on the Titanic in a past life. And I feel that the dreams are Titanic herself reaching out to call those of us home who were with her all those years ago. Because we can be with her in dreams in a way that we just can't in the waking world."
That's interesting. Wow.
Some sort of connection there.
Yeah, that's really pretty.
It is.
Corey says that they are consuming everything about Titanic that they can. I wonder if they played the PC game from the 90s, the Titanic mystery game. Have you played that one yet?
No.
I wonder if you have it in your Steam library.
Maybe. I don't know. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, having done all of these dream stories, we were bound to have some prophetic dreams, but I found Hayes's story, the dream experiences one, to be extremely interesting because they added like a new layer to this whole dream work thing where their dad was giving them puzzles when they went to sleep and they would work out the puzzles in their dreams. And it was like this whole family lineage, they're just lucid dreamers. And that's so cool. It makes me wonder why I lucid dream so often and always have, but my parents didn't even know what lucid dreaming was. They never had one in their life. And it's funny that it just kind of like runs in their family and Hayes's family. And the thing is, the puzzle didn't really make sense to me in this one. Maybe I'm just not smart enough. It was OTTFF blank blank. And it would repeat that 3 times. So Hayes was supposed to figure out the 2 blanks. What are the 2 letters after OTTFF? She came up with SS. I don't really understand that.
6, 7. 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. OTTFF. So it must be SS for 6, 7.
Oh, I get it now. That's a great puzzle.
That is a good one. Yeah. I'm pretty sure in Salute Your Shorts, they talked to, or somebody was talking to the kids in their sleep to make them have a nightmare about Zeke the plumber. Remember that
mm-hmm,
episode?
I do.
Yeah.
That just brought back a weird memory.
Yeah, that's a creepy one.
Yeah, so it had to do with her Barbies. 6 of them were boys and 7 of them were girls. And it just so happens that this story coincides with the 6-7 phenomenon that's going on right now.
It is a phenomenon.
And it's funny because I think we got this story quite a while ago. So this is prophetic in its own way.
It really is, yeah. Awesome. I don't really have any notes on hand about Kevin's prophetic dreams, but I did want to acknowledge his.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. Thank you for sharing. And really sorry to hear about your loss, though.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got here? Yeah, speaking of lucid dreaming, the story by Puka.
Yeah.
That one is a little disturbing, to say the least.
Yeah.
It sounds like the dream guide may have been trying to help her tap into some abilities that she has.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that she's very intuitive in real life, maybe an empath or something.
Yeah.
Claircognizant, even.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty messed up first lesson, though. Even the guide called it a bad test, so.
Yeah, that was funny to me how the guide was like, "Ooh, yeah, sorry, bad test. You weren't ready for that one. Your kids are going to love it, though."
Mm-hmm. Goes to show that maybe these guides aren't necessarily omniscient or not as much as we think, or they just don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if they're omniscient. They probably make mistakes and are quote unquote just as human as we are in many ways, I would imagine. This read kind of like a Stephen King short story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe she was supposed to solve some crime, like supposed to catch some child abductor, but she was too young. She was mm-hmm. the wrong person to select for the job.
You can't deputize a child in that sort of thing.
No.
Live and learn. And 20 years later, she can still see that guy's face, so I would still be on the lookout.
Yeah. Twilight people, I like that. I just think of people that like the movie Twilight when I hear that.
That's fair.
I've actually never seen any of those movies, have you?
I saw the second one in theaters. Long story, but that's the only one I've seen.
Huh.
I didn't hate it. I liked the production of it, just the overall vibe and all that, but it's whatever.
Yeah, my wife loves them. Anyway, I think that's about all we have for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for all the dream stories that you did send in. I love doing these episodes because dreaming is such a huge part of everybody's life, for the most part, those of us that can remember them. And we get so many of these stories, we just kind of save them up for these special episodes. And I just cannot wait for all of the hate mail from the listeners that hate the dream stories.
Snooze fest.
Yeah. So send your hate mail to stories@oddtrails.com. Also send your stories there. And sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails, because you're going to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes. It's the best way to listen to the show and support us, sweet little boys. And make sure you check out the new episode of my other podcast, Let's Not Meet. I also have another podcast called The Old Time Radio Cast. You can find them all at crypticcountypodcasts.com, wherever you get your shows. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody, stay safe.
Peace out.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.